from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome to The First Cut, an interview series featuring conversations with some of the most talented singer-songwriters recording today. I'm Laura Schein from WFBK in Louisville, Kentucky, and we've asked our guests about some firsts in their lives. Same set of questions, totally different answers. Today on The First Cut, we have Kentucky singer-songwriter S.G. Goodman, whose debut album Old Time Feeling got her attention for its vivid songwriting and her singular voice. She is deep and thoughtful and definitely an artist to watch out for.
Welcome to The First Cut. We have S.G. Goodman with us and her new album called Old Time Feeling. We've been playing a lot on WFBK. It is so good, S.G., and so good to have you here with us today. Thank you for doing The First Cut.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And thanks for spinning the record.
Now, you're from Kentucky. Where in Kentucky are you from?
Well, I was born in Western Tennessee, but yeah, raised in Kentucky. Originally, I'm from a little river town called Hickman, Kentucky, that's on the Mississippi River, and it's the most western tip, but currently I reside in Murray, Kentucky.
Okay. Did you go to school in Murray?
I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I graduated with a philosophy degree.
Which means you can be a musician. You can be anything you want.
Exactly. That's what they tell you.
Same for English degree, which is what I have. So yeah, that's mm-hmm. how it goes. All right. Well, we have some questions for you today for The First Cut, and we're going to just kind of roll through them here. So the first question is, what was the first record you fell in love with?
Well, my first CD I ever owned was Spice Girls.
If you want to be my lover, you got to get with my friends. Make it last forever. Friendship never ends. If you want to be my lover, you have got to give. Taking it too easy, but that's the way it is.
Oh. All right.
That was my CD, but my first tape I ever owned, I got for Christmas, and that was the Space Jam soundtrack. So, good one.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Great. What was the first song you learned on an instrument?
It would have been something on the piano when I was enrolled in lessons as a child. So probably Mary Had a Little Lamb, something, you know, real just for teaching purposes, that kind of thing. So, but I have stories and videos of me as probably like a 4-year-old taking a guitar in someone's house and doing my best to redo Way Down Yonder on the Chattahoochee by Alan Jackson. So,
yeah, Way Down Yonder on the Chattahoochee. Never knew how much that muddy water meant to me, but I learned how to swim and I learned who I was. A lot about living and a little about love.
Wow. What was the first, say, really complicated song you learned?
I guess that's a difficult one. I would say I had a piano recital probably about second grade, which was about the time I quit piano as well. I hated performing in front of people. And I remember really botching Somewhere Over the Rainbow in front of a good crowd of parents and old people. So, you know, I would say that was a scarring moment.
Have you picked the piano back up again? I mean, do you play it now?
I do. I have a piano in my house, and I, you know, a lot of people don't know this about me, but I do everything by ear. I'm not classically trained in any way. As I said, I quit piano early. I couldn't handle the performing aspect of it. So, I piddle around on a lot of things. So, yeah.
Is guitar your main instrument?
I would say so, definitely. And, you know, I've played it long enough to be able to make do and try to do what I do on it well, as best I can. You know, I'm not a lead guitarist in any way. Yeah, I would say it's my main instrument, but probably truthfully the only real instrument that I'm advanced in any kind of capacity would be my voice. So,
What was the first song that you wrote?
That's a good question too. I remember as a little kid before, I've never been one to understand other people's lyrics. Even to this day, when I get a record or something, I have to go to the lyric sheet and see what people are really saying. For some reason, I can't make it out, which is odd. So I always botch other people's lyrics. And I think as a young child, because I would just make up my own lyrics to everybody else's songs, it's really hard to say the first song I wrote, but I do remember writing a chorus once when I was putting up dishes in my mother's house. And I don't know what I was thinking, but I was imagining a story in my head, and I just was belting out a line that said, he cried, we cried, something cried. I don't know, but I remember the melody to that song.
Really?
And, I was little enough to where you'd have to scoot the chair up to the countertops to get up there and put the dishes away. But that's the first song I remember writing as far as lyrics. But I also remember as I was probably about 3 or 4, and my mother had bought a piano for our family. And I remember calling my dad into our piano room, and which was also like our dining room, and say, listen, I wrote a scary song. and I had a little melody going, and he said, that does sound like a scary movie song. And that's what I remember. Mm-hmm.
Do you like scary movies now?
I don't own a TV. I haven't owned a TV since I left my parents' house. I guess I didn't own one then either. It was theirs. But I have an anxiety disorder. And, a lot of people love, the people who ride roller coasters and stuff, they're addicted to that feeling of that rush. I can experience that rush just walking through my house, so I don't really seek it out. So I don't watch scary movies or cartoons, or I guard myself pretty heavily in that regard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was the first song you recorded that you felt, proud enough to record? Like, this is good. This is solid.
Well, I was raised in a real conservative Christian household. And when I got my first guitar, I taught myself to a tape for about a year. And then I started taking lessons in Lone Oak, Kentucky. If you've ever heard of that Christian artist, Stephen Curtis Chapman.
So I dance with Cinderella while she's here in my arms. 'Cause I know something the prince never knew.
His dad owned a guitar shop in Lone Oak. And so a lot of at that point in my life, being raised in the church and stuff and supposedly experiencing salvation, a lot of my lyrics and things were of that nature. And I had a song called Authenticity. And they took me, this is one reason. I mean, obviously I'm much older now and need to take responsibility. You can't keep blaming people for your lack of guitar skills. But the way those guitar lessons would go, I started writing songs as soon as I picked it up, but I was only writing to about the 3 chords I know, which, I really haven't progressed that much since then. I'm a 3 chords and the truth kind of person. But I remember going into my teacher and showing him my songs, and he would just noodle on top of them and make me think that I'd really done something. And I would say in some ways that helped me because it made me focus on a very important element of the song, which was my lyrics and melody. So, but they took me in a back room one day, and Mr. Herb Chapman he swore he was going to send this to Stephen Curtis.
Then to be the king of a vast domain,
He never did.
Oh, too bad. Mm-hmm. Were you hoping to be a Christian singer-songwriter yourself? Were you hoping to go that route?
Well, because of how conservative I was personally at the time, there was a period in my teenage years where I put the boundary on myself where I didn't listen to secular music. And I mean, I was insane. I thought I was a Calvinist, for crying out loud. And I guess that was, I enjoyed music and I enjoyed writing, and it didn't make sense to me why God would give me this gift if not to use it or whatever. So yeah, I think for a moment there, I told myself that I could be a Christian artist.
When did that change? Like what made you pivot from, you know, doing secular music yourself?
Well, I mean, you know, when I say that I was very entrenched in the church, I loved it. I loved doctrine. I've always been a big reader, and I got really into, you know, studying doctrine and kind of learning church history and all this stuff. And I would, that love for that kind of thing, made me want to go deeper in college. And, I got into philosophy, and I still have a very sweet spot in my heart for, like Aquinas and Anselm, Augustine, those, you know, the three pillars of a kind of Christianity, or the three A's, you know. And I think the more and more I started to pour myself into the idea of free will and how, you know, the historical context of the Bible and different religions and things. I was in an epistemology class one time, and I was always very obsessed with free will and things like that, and justification of things. You know, in a town of 3,000, like I was raised, there was probably 15 different Baptist churches, and we all believed different things. And we all had different ideas of how people were going to heaven. And I found that very interesting, that I was born in supposedly the right way. You know, as far as like I was born and raised in the church that knew the truth and was teaching the truth, and the idea of truth with a capital T always kind of led me to dig deeper. And I finally feel resolved in saying that as far as I believe about religion and who's knows the right path, that there's a lot of valid arguments. But as far as their soundness, we don't know that. So that's where I rest with all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was the first heartache song that you really connected with?
I would say a song that has always made me cry. And, you know, it's not necessarily a lovesick song, but My Father's House by Bruce Springsteen.
I broke through the trees, and there in the night, my father's house stood shining hard and bright.
And I think it's because the melody of it is so hymn-like, and it reaches a part of me that's so much apart, you know, so much intertwined in my essence as far as the way I was raised and the voices that shaped me and shaped music in my life. It, to hear the narrative alongside that type of style, just kind of blew my mind. Even as a child, my mother was a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, and we had a lot of his records and things. So I would say that song is still, I can't listen to it hardly.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the first artist that you really admired?
Well, growing up, I took care of an old lady across the street from me and my family. We had old farming connections to her, and her husband moved her in across the street when he had cancer and knew he was going to die, and her name was Miss Betty. Miss Betty had an old piano and would play a lot of old country songs, Patsy Cline, Hank Williams, you know, Lefty Frizzell, a bunch of the old timers, and I got really into Patsy Cline.
Your cheating heart will make you
Miss Betty, and she couldn't sing worth, you know, anything. Her piano was out of tune, and one day I remember finding an old country classics album, and I brought my little portable CD player over there so I wouldn't have to listen to Miss Betty on that piano anymore. And we listened to those old songs, and I fell in love with old country music through her and through the stories she would tell about when she first heard them, or maybe her parents had money back in the Depression, so they could go and actually see these people. And so that was it was kind of wild for me to picture her as a young girl out in the middle of a field at some of those drive up, you know, like field shows. So that was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Patsy Cline, what a great choice. I mean, that voice. And so unique and beautiful. What was the name of the first band that you played with? Did you play in a band when you were coming up?
Yeah, I did. The first band, so I started as a solo artist in the pop arena, believe it or not. I started writing pop music as a late teenager and decided I didn't really enjoy that style of music. I love pop, but I don't enjoy performing it. And I mean, I don't think anybody would imagine me doing that either. My grandmother passed away, and I wrote a song called Little River Town. And I felt that there was something more authentic about writing lyrics about things that about my home. I was homesick, you know, with the death of my grandmother. And I started a band. I didn't have members yet, but I started a project that I called The Savage Radley.
Name. I like that name.
Oh, thank you. A lot of people do, and a lot of people don't, I'll tell you. You know, after MySpace, it was kind of hard to craft a stage name of any kind. But I got a group of boys together, you know, in a small place, you don't know a ton of musicians. And the drummer for my project moved to Austin, Texas, and told me to look up this boy named Stephen Montgomery, who oddly I was in classes with in school or in college. And we got to playing together, I guess, late 2010, and have been best friends and have been playing together ever since, along with my guitarist, Matt Rowan. So we got a, you know, kind of a good bragging point. Not a lot of people can maintain relationships in music that long.
Very true. What's a record you're listening to now that you're really liking?
I've been listening to a lot of this girl from Canada called Jennifer Castle, and she's got this song, Texas and Rose Waterfalls, and she takes forever to get to the chorus in that song, Rose Waterfalls, but when it hits, it hits.
They call me Rose.
It is amazing. And man, talk about someone who doesn't get talked enough in the Americana world, but I've listened to her. But my go-to record is always Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass Band's Whipped Cream and Other Delights, which a lot of people make fun of me about, but it's it's the perfect music for any mood. You're sad, you're happy, sun shining, it ain't shining. It's just a good everyday little soundtrack. So that, you know, I listen to that a lot.
It's also got a great album cover.
It does. You know, I think you see it everywhere, but I don't think a lot of people listen to it. And it's got some of the best melodies out there.
Yeah. Well, back in the day, they did listen to it. I know, because my mom had that album on vinyl. And I remember being just fascinated with the cover of it, and you know, that being played around the house quite a bit. It was a really popular at one time for sure. What's a song that lifts you up? I mean, I know this Jennifer Castle is something you've been listening to, but is there a song that would be, you know, completely uplifting to you?
I love pop staples, Somebody Was Watching Over Me.
Somebody was on.
Somebody was watching as the dame. And it's just, you know, no matter how I feel about spirituality or something, it just, you know, everybody, there's a time when you need to feel like there's, you know, that you're not facing everything alone. And I just love that guitar lick he does throughout it. What a great album to leave the world with. And that's, you know, I love the blues and stuff, and I love that song. I say that's my, you know, real, I guess, track for happiness and feeling uplifted for sure.
Perfect. Well, SG, that's it. That's all there is to it for the first cut. And I feel like we learned a lot about you through this. And who would have thought Spice Girls is where you started?
My friend Adrian Black gave me that record. And yep, that was it. So it was just a friend.
Well, listen, have a great new year. And thank you again for doing the first cut. It's really nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me. And you take care of yourself.
Thank you, too.
Thanks for listening to The First Cut from WFPK and Louisville Public Media, available wherever you get your podcasts. Our show is produced by Stacey Owen, edited by Tyler Franklin and Eric Matthews, and hosted by me, Laura Schein. You can also see our First Cut videos by visiting WFPK.org/The First Cut.